Well, if Wall Street happened to be in a boxing ring, it would be smashed all over the place, put against the ropes, and pounded. And they've just had another difficult session today. Things are just up in arms. You know, people just aren't easy with the investment market these days. Well, one of the persons who told us about it, Sean David Morton, predicted this, predicted the rise of gold. We're going to talk with him. Full program just ahead with intuitive remote viewer, Sean David Morton. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Sean David Morton, our special guest, a graduate of USC. Go figure. You'll find out why. Futurist, remote viewer, natural intuitive, author of the best-selling book, The Black Seraph, award-winning independent filmmaker and television producer. And he's worked on programs such as Hard Copy and Strange Universe. And he also publishes the Delphi Associates newsletter, heads up an investment fund in which he uses his remote viewing, natural intuitive abilities to invest. Sean David Morton, back for a full show, we promised you, and here he is. Right now. Hey, Sean, how are you?
Hey, boss, I'm good. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Doing well.
I want to say thank you to you and thank you to Tom and Lisa and your fantastic staff and everybody there for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, not only do they love having you on the show, Sean, but you're driven by our audience that inundates us with emails saying, isn't it about time he gets a full program? Last time you were on for 1 hour.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, we had to go and move on to our next guest. And, man, I got flooded with emails who said, keep him, we want him back. So here you are.
Well, I also apologize for the last part of that. I had, I think at the end, somebody asked me a very complex question with, like, 4 minutes to go. And I'm sorry, I think I spoke over you. And I just had to speak very quickly to see if I could answer the question. And also, hey, if the writer's strike is happening and you know, if Jennifer doesn't have anything to do, I'm pretty sure we could probably find something for her to do around the house here. So if she wants to come, you know, do some typing or work on the computer, she's welcome if she's out of work to we could figure something out to do for old Jennifer Love Hewitt there.
You are so generous, Sean, aren't you?
No, she's great. That was I very much enjoyed listening to the first hour of the program. She's
real.
Love the show. Very, very great stuff. I think it's important what you're doing because it shows people that we're all a form of energy, that science teaches us that energy really can't be created or destroyed. Therefore, scientifically, we are in fact immortal, and it's a question of where that energy goes and how that energy develops and manifests as part of the holographic universe and the information wave. So it's always fascinating to hear your guests talk about the world of spirit and just to show people that there are other things and other realms and other dimensions, which is what you do best.
Sean, next hour we'll talk about Armageddon and some of your thoughts, but so many Americans right now are concerned about their financial future, their houses, their jobs, and lately you have been just uncanny with some of your predictions and views of the future. Let's first of all talk about where in the heck we are right now. What the heck's going on, Sean?
A lot of this has to do with there's a whole series of things that are kind of happening in my mind here. We've got I'm looking at the cycles of the Great Pyramid of Giza that talk about the beginning of economic and catastrophic earth changes starting in 2005. It virtually hit dead on the tsunamis in Asia and the earthquakes around the world and the horrible hurricane in Louisiana. Talking about the beginning of the collapse of material civilization, if you look at the Mayan and Aztec calendars, everything is culminating right now into the last galactic week in both the Mayan and Aztec calendars. And the people that have done the really yeoman's work on this have been Dr. Carl Johan Kalaman and John Major Jenkins, who wrote Mayan Cosmogenesis and Callahan's fantastic book, The Mayan Calendar and the Transformation of Consciousness. And what I see looking at this from the aspect of political and economic cycles, you know, I've always looked at the stock market for the, gosh, I think 16 years. Has it been that long, George? 16
yeah,
years?
Yeah, it is. So, you have been here, I think, before Art Bell was on. That's how far back you go.
I still remember calling him from a phone booth out in Rachel, Nevada, telling him about what was going on out at 51 when his show was just picked up in Vegas, I think.
That's right. And you had a big S on your outfit, right? For Sean, not Superman.
Stupid, probably. seriously inane. Anyway, so that through the course of this, what I've been talking about since then, you know, since I've had the opportunity to talk about the economic cycles, is that the rationing stock market. I can't even tell you how many times, well, art and callers and just, you know, haters out there have mocked me, saying that, oh, the stock market's never going to go to, I remember when I was telling people the stock market was going to go to 4,000, and they thought I was insane. And then I said 6,000, then 8,000, then 10,000, then 11, then 12, then 13, then 14. I think we had a conversation, I think, a year ago when I was telling you the stock market was going to go 14, and you said,
yep.
Oh, my, I don't see how that's going to happen. And now that it's beyond up around 14 and above.
Yep.
For this cycle, I thought was interesting is that back in 97, when I talked about this particular period of time, I talked to the market, the high of the market I thought would be somewhere around, and like I said, I said liberally, I would think that the market would be somewhere around 16,000, 16,500, and there is still the possibility that it might hit that, but that 14,000 would be the bottom end of the market. I saw it actually between 14 and 14,500, and since the market went to about 14, I think it went to a high of about 14,300 or so before it started ratcheting down, but that this was not a good thing, that what was good for Wall Street is not good for Main Street, and people are beginning to figure out that there's only about 30 major companies that are driving the spike in the market, that is just not good for anybody. The rest of this, and this is really, when I'm out there and I'm talking to people and I'm speaking in New York and Chicago and Seattle and, you know, in all these different places, you know, people ask me what's going on. And I say, well, it's because you stopped paying attention. You know, what's happening to the middle class? Well, they stop paying attention. When you stop paying attention to your kids, they become thugs. When you stop paying attention to your schools, they become nightmares. To your communities, they become ghettos. To your politics, then you get the kind of politicians that we've got today. And what's really happening is that people that listen to your program and listen to alternative thought and alternative news and whatever, because the media is so completely controlled and so utterly lockstep controlled. All 25,000 forms of communication in the United States, newspapers, magazines, radios, are now owned, and it's very prevalent here in Los Angeles where I am, and you are too, but they're owned by like seven guys. And this program somehow has managed to, you know, like a beautiful flower through the cracks of concrete that are being placed over the world, has risen towards the sun in an amazing way to allow this very brief peak of light and truth. And the idea here is that for those with the ears to hear and the eyes to see, they've known from understanding alternative media. When I was on the show, I think in July of 2006, it didn't take psychic powers at all. It took listening to people like Jim Tucker and American Free Press, and because they report on things like the Bilderbergers, and, you know, Alex Jones has a lot to do with that as well. But when the wealthiest people in the world get together and tell you what they're going to do to you, they ain't just whistling Dixie. You better pay attention. And
so you use instinct too, then, obviously.
Well, I know the cycles. I know where it's going to go. And I've been criticized for this because I use my brain on a lot of this. I project to a point in the future where I see what gold's going to be at a certain point, for example. And I've given dates and I've given time frames and I've given you exact dates as to when silver would be at a certain price and gold would be at a certain price, et cetera, all in this program. And then what I do is I then blue sky and say, okay, well, let's use futurism here and the massive information that I have at my disposal, along with very heavy people inside government, people who are giving me source information. And for whatever reason, George, these are guys who are presidential advisors. These are guys who are very heavy into the Pentagon. These are people who have said, look, Sean, we trust you. I'm protected in a number of ways because I'm a reporter for American's Bulletin and a magazine in Europe called Ten Dance, and I'm sort of protected with I have an ambassadorial credential. And you know, so there's various ways that I'm kind of protected from things going on. And I have, because of my experience with Hard Copy and Strange Universe, built up a database of people who trust me and know that I'm going to get source information out to people. So you can take it, you know, your audience and the people out there can take this, you know, any way they want. I am telling you the truth when I tell you what's going on the inside. And over and over and over again, when I've talked about things on this program, they've come out in the media, you know, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, years later. So with the economic surge, this is what we're kind of talking about here, the I mean, I'll just give you the inside scoop on what's really happening now.
All right. Give me the bullet points.
We talked a year ago. I'm sorry, my cat's upset about something.
Take care of the cat first. What's the matter with him?
He's funny. He's just, that's Shaloo. He's just walking around.
Did you feed him?
It was a year ago. We talked about the collapse of the subprime lending market. Now, the Bilderbergers had a whole meeting about this where Bush's economic advisor, Alan Hubbard, was sitting in the front row at the Bilderberg conference, and some guy said these stupid Americans are gonna get everything they deserve. And we then watched the subprime lending market begin to collapse. And now that real estate is going along this cycle, you are going to see, and once again, predicted on the program, not a psychic or intuitive prediction. It's something because I paid attention. I then blue skied it and took it out and thought to myself, oh, my Lord, what's going to happen when this collapses? And then I started crunching the numbers on this. And if you actually look at it, there have been, in the last 7 years, there have been approximately 14 million loans that have been made in approximately in the subprime markets. And what's happened is that within the next, well, gosh, I think that time frame's over, but within, I would say, the next 30 days or so, or should I say, let's just say within the last 3 months and continuing forward in the next 2 months, they will actually foreclose on well over half of those loans. That's about 7 million subprime loans. Let's assume that those are on houses with, say, 2 to 4 people. That means that, and by the way, it's not even over. It's going to get, the worst it's going to get is about 6 months down the pipe. So if we're looking at...
And let me ask you, Sean, is that the problem of, you know, and I feel sorry for everybody who's in this position, but were they tricked into getting these mortgages, or were they pulled into getting these mortgages? Or I think the keeping up with the Jones scenario is what has pushed people to the brink of just extending themselves beyond what they should. And the least little thing that goes over the edge pulls them with them.
Well, okay, then that's a perfect lead in this. That's a fantastic observation and a perfect lead into what we're talking about, because what that has to do with is that now we are talking about the collapse of dualistic culture, and we're talking about the collapse of materialism, and people have now seen what's happened when they, quote, live beyond their means, when they play that whole keeping up with the Joneses kind of deal, when they get sucked into the whole aspect of American culture. I joke about that the motto of the Egyptian culture is as above, so below, as within, so without. The motto of the Greek culture was know thyself. The motto of the Roman culture was to thine own self be true. And the motto of the American civilization, one of the greatest civilizations ever to grace the surface of this planet, is mo is better. If I just had mo of something, it'd be better. If I had a bigger house, if I had more cars, if I had more stuff, it'd be better. And people are beginning to realize that that's not, in fact, the case.
No, it's not.
And so here's the bullet points. The idea is that we haven't seen the worst of this. The worst of this is going to come March, April, May, June of next year. You're going to see property values across the United States, with the exception, I might add, of probably New York City, Manhattan, Seattle, and most of the surrounding suburbs around Seattle, and probably right where I am in Hermosa Beach, any place, Santa Monica, south of here, all the way down to Newport Beach, you know, this entire area of L.A. County, you're going to see housing prices and housing levels drop to a pre-2000 level, where you'll be able to pay what you paid in, say, 1997, 1998.
Even like Beverly Hills, which is...
Beverly Hills is
way overpriced.
The real estate values have already dropped there. It's mostly, you know, heck, where I live in Hermosa, you know, for the amount of time that I've lived here in Hermosa, you know, I've watched houses go quadruple in value, literally. I mean, I think every house around me is anywhere between $2 and $6 million.
Okay, so what happens if, let's say the house was worth $1 million.
Right.
And now it's worth
$400,000, $500,000, maybe top.
Yeah, but they borrowed up to $1 million. They kept refinancing. They kept taking money out of it. Now what happens?
Well, because it means that everything gets flushed down the toilet.
I mean, as long as they pay, as long as they pay their mortgage, they can't get foreclosed on, right?
Correct, right.
Okay.
Correct.
But
what I'm saying, though, is that, and actually, in some ways, this is the only thing that's keeping everything kind of afloat right now. With the way the dollar, and there's a lot more other stuff I wanted to talk about relative.
You're on for 3 hours, Sean.
Yeah, okay.
This is not an hour program.
With the dollar collapse, okay, this is why inflation and deflation is actually is good and bad, is that usually in times of war, you will have an inflated currency. And usually this goes in 7-year cycles. It goes in a 7-year cycle. This all goes back to the Bible. It all goes back to the Sabbath and keeping the seventh day holy. And every 7 years you declare Jubilee and you repudiate debts and let the land lie fallow and all that stuff. And 7 times 7 is 49. And in the 49th and 50th year, biblically, you returned land to the people that originally owned it, because economically, the cycle goes that every 50 years, all land, because of interest banking, usually changes hands anyway. And we're in the end of one of those 50-year cycles right now. So the idea is that with the worthlessness of American currency, with the inflation rate that we've seen over the past year, which we talked about again on this program when I told you that the Fed was going to start printing money like crazy, that they even moved the printing presses out of Philadelphia to South Korea so they could print more money cheaper, on and on and on and on and on. That's good, actually, for people, because as the dollar gets worth less, it allows you to actually pay off your property. In other words, if your mortgage is at $1 million and you're paying it off with what the dollar is worth now, you can actually pay your house off with money that's worth less. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
So that's why inflation is good. It's good for people that are actually paying on property, because it allows them to pay on some property. The bad part is because we have had the majority of our industry all completely – the United States is in the process of being foreclosed on. We're basically bankrupt.
But my impression right now, Sean, is that the middle class, which was the backbone of this country, is being eroded away, and I don't see anyone out there trying to protect it.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. There is no they have been completely disenfranchised. Government's not protecting them. Government and corporations have become the same thing.
They're asking for another $80 billion for Iraq and Iran.
Right.
That $80 billion alone could repair a lot of bridges in this country.
Well, it's the big slap in the face was the fires in San Diego
and Iraq and Afghanistan.
And I would like to apologize to people out there, because I completely missed it. I had so many things going on.
What do you mean you missed it?
I missed it. I mean, I missed it in terms of the work I do with maps and projecting things that happen to the country. The San Diego thing was just not on my radar at all. The fact that San Diego, right where I live, just down the coast, is burning down, and I didn't foresee it, is one of those things that just I was just really racking my head about this, because it made me refocus myself back on working with my maps, projecting forward what I see going on, because I just felt horrible that I didn't get the warning out to people about what was going on.
Well, unfortunately, Dr. Evelyn Paglini felt it. She didn't know exactly where, specifically time-wise, but she picked up on it.
Right. Well, what I was saying is that what you were just talking about, the war, is that here Bush comes here, and with the billions that are being spent in Iraq and Iran, you know, offers us $5 million, which, by the way, was money that he took away from a fund. And remember, Schwarzenegger's like his only pal. I mean, he's the only friend he's really got left. And the $5 million was originally earmarked for a study, because Schwarzenegger was begging for money to rebuild the dams up in up around Sacramento, because they're all decaying, and the next big rain is going to knock these things over, and you're going to just have a biblical catastrophe in Northern California. So the $5 million was earmarked for a study, then went to San Diego, you know, which was basically just kind of it was just like spitting in their faces. It was so little money.
So what are we telling people to do, though, Sean? Tighten up? Is that what you're recommending?
It depends. That's a very broad question. It depends on what your current situation is. What I'm seeing as the overall trend, again, and this all revolves around what we're going to talk about tonight, as far as the beginning of the fifth night, the beginning of this of a massive downward cycle economically.
Armageddon.
It is, and it isn't. It's not Armageddon the way we think it in the terms of the old kind of left brain historical religious construct. It is Armageddon in the terms of an expression of consciousness, in terms of an expression of a shifting. I mean, the word apocalypse in and of itself means that which is occulted or that which is hidden.
Hold it right there. Hold it right there. We'll be right back with Sean David Morton. Pick up the After Dark newsletter, Renew. Call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505, or you can go online at coasttocoastam.com. 13 issues for the price of 12. The After Dark newsletter is this incredible magazine devoted to Coast to Coast, with all kinds of stories Lex Lonehood, the webmaster, writes an article every once in a while, almost every month, as a matter of fact. We really work, Lex. And it's just a great magazine. So pick it up. You get some great story ideas, and it's a great reference guide to the rest of the program, After Dark. Well, we're back with the man, Sean David Morton. You know, I'm going to start calling you a futurist more than I am an intuitive.
Well, it's both. I get some flack because I have a political science background, I have a government background, I have a, you know, obviously a producing and film background and all that. And, you know, the intuitive stuff that I do has more to do with working with maps and predicting, you know, earthquakes and hurricanes and, you know, fires, floods, things like that. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, the definition of prophecy in and of itself, I mean, if you look at the prophets of the Old Testament, like Samuel, for example, who was intimately connected with King David. I mean, every single prophet in the Bible had something to do with politics. You had Joseph, who I guess was one of the first real prophets in the Bible, and the first predictions he gave to the Pharaoh were mostly economic predictions about 7 years of famine and that seven fat cows and the seven thin cows. And so, you know, it all has to do with politics. It all has to do with being concerned about people. It all has to do with you know, there's no point in my standing up here and jumping up and down and saying, oh, we're all doomed. Oh, it's all terrible, blah, 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 because it's all about doors closing and then windows opening. It's all about, you know, you were talking about Armageddon and the judgment day scenario that we're talking about is not in the sense of scenarios that have been spun and generated by historical religions, because there won't be a separation of good and evil or sheep and goats or Democrats or Republicans or people who like Ghost Whisperer versus CSI or how many moral brownie points and gold stars we've accumulated in our lifetimes. It is going to be about developing our intuition to be in the right place at the right time and choosing to surf the waves of the divine process of creation towards its intended end result. And the end result is unity, peace, enlightenment, the new Jerusalem. And those who make the choices are not necessarily better or more valuable than other people, but they're the ones who just make the right choice at the right time. And it's very interesting. What we're talking about, the November 19th date that's coming up, night five of 2007. It's also very interesting to hear my own predictions and prophecies sort of repeated back to me by other people. I've had there was an email floating around by a Mayan elder who claims that as of the 19th that they are going to go to ground, that they're going to start building their hogans or their kivas. I think hogans with the Hopi and kivas with the Navajos. But that the idea was is that as of the 19th they were retiring, that you would see the beginning of World War III when Pakistan attacks India with nuclear weapons. This is something that I've been saying since 1994, since the Vajra Chronicles, saying that the Pakistanians were going to get not only nuclear weapons but missiles, and that we would see the beginning of this major world conflict when Pakistan attacks India.
And here we have this problem now with Pakistan internally falling apart.
Well, and the real challenge here is that, you know, Musharraf is our guy. Musharraf is CIA, U.S. Intel, MI6, all the way. He's our guy. We put him in power. We made him take over. And when it looked like he was going to lose the election, he's now taken over the country again. But what's going to happen is you're going to see his own military begin to revolt against him. And once Boutros, I hope I'm saying her name correctly, but once she actually comes in, you know, you're looking at, once again, a bunch of really crazy people that have nuclear weapons, where it doesn't really take a cruise missile, which is what they got when, I mean, they actually got their hands on a cruise missile when Clinton in 98 sent two cruise missiles to blow up this baby food factory or something in Afghanistan. And one of the missiles went off course and didn't explode and wound up in Pakistan. And on the front page of the papers, the Pakis were jumping up and down with this missile saying, you know, it's a gift from Allah and all that. And then, of course, because of Khan, who actually gave them nuclear weapons, and I would be more worried about the proliferation of nukes from out of Pakistan to the rest of the Muslim world than certainly that I would be worried about what's going on with Iran.
Well, that's a huge concern, and I also have a feeling that we might have had nuclear wars between the regions of Pakistan and India millions of years ago, Sean.
Well, actually, that's another very astute observation, because if you actually read, I've been to the place in India, a place called Kurukshetra, which is the actual events. I mean, I've sat under the banyan tree where Arjuna and Krishna supposedly had their conversations. The whole point of the Mahabharata is this massive tome of a whole series of wars, and the Bhagavad Gita is a very brief conversation between the hero Arjuna and Krishna, and it's very telling of what's going on now. They were sections of Pakistan and India, the same sections today. This conflict supposedly happened only about 40,000 years or so ago, and the idea was is that Arjuna doesn't want to fight anymore. And this is a lesson to, I think, all these people there. Arjuna doesn't want to fight anymore. He doesn't want to kill his uncle. He doesn't want to kill his brethren, people that he knows. And Krishna shows him that he had karma stretching back through millions of lifetimes, and that his uncle did the same thing to him in a previous life, and it was for him to balance the scale, so to speak. And actually, at that time, they released in the Bhagavad Gita something called the Needles of Shiva. And when Oppenheimer actually exploded the first atomic bomb, he talked about how it was like looking into the open eye of Shiva, the god of destruction. And they talked about how these blasts, that they melted the flesh off an elephant before the skeleton could even hit the ground. Very much a whole series of descriptions that look very much like an exchange of nuclear weapons in the same region about 40,000 years ago. And I was there in 1986 when I was actually on my way to Dharamsala, which is where I got to kind of study with the Dalai Lama for about 3 months or so, and then on my way to Nepal, where I lived in the Black Hat Monastery, Tangbache, there for about 8 months or so. So, you know, that was my whole journey, my quest, my journey at that time.
Before you couldn't take it anymore.
No, that's not true. It was in December, because there was a drought that year, it was either leave when I did or I'd be stuck there because it would snow and I'd have to stay another year. So, you know, until it...
Could you have stayed another year?
It was one of the most interesting, fascinating,
John,
terrifying points of my life.
Could you have stayed?
You know, look, I was the nutty white American boy that mostly did the laundry and cooked the meals and whatever. And it was fascinating and amazing. And it was tough.
You wanted to come home.
You get homesick. You miss America after a while.
All right. Okay. I won't push it anymore.
What were we talking about before? Oh, let me just finish my one thought, if I may, about the right. We were just talking about the fifth cycle here. There's the larger cycle of the fifth night, and once again, this is coming up. This is a shift of energy that opens. I'm not saying that November 19th that Armageddon is going to happen and that the missiles will be in the air or whatever. What it is that we're talking about this year from November 19th, 2007, through November 12th of 2008, is going to be a deep crisis for global materialist culture. There's going to be a destructive reaction, what you might call Armageddon. The European Union and Germany are going to be in the center of this drama. If you look at the larger cycles, there's a fifth night. There's what they call a national cycle, there's different cycles that they call national cycles and galactic cycles. The galactic cycle we're talking about now runs from January 5th, 1999, through the end of the Aztec calendar of October 28, 2011. And what it, in essence, talks about is that through the fifth night and day of the national cycle was ruled by Quetzalcoatl, who was the Lord of Light and the bearded white man, the son of God, and it brought a change in consciousness, which was brought about by the heaven of Quetzalcoatl, and it created this receptiveness for the Christian message among people. In the fifth day of the next year, there was a new expression of Christ consciousness, and this is what we're going to see. This is what's exciting, I think, in the next year. We are going to see a new expression of the Christ consciousness emerge. Now, this might be called the return of Christ, but it is an energy change rather than the return of one individual, the galactic Christ consciousness. So in the next year, the exciting part about what happens is that this will have a unifying effect of bringing the yin and the yang polarities together, the left and the right-hand sides of the brain, the male didactic kind of limbic system side of the brain, together with the female intuitive side of the brain, to serve to make us whole individually and collectively. And the origin of this impulse is going to come from the East. And I think that the Olympics in China are going to be something huge on a cosmic level. And already the Chinese are talking about how I thought it was an interesting blurb today where they talked about, we allow religious freedom in China. We allow Bibles in China. Sure. We have religious freedom in China. Oh, unless you're Falun Gong or the Tibetans, and then you're banned.
So, and we'll run over you with a tank.
Yeah, we'll run over you with a tank. Exactly. And so I think that it is very telling that this pulse of energy comes from the East, and that the 2008 Olympics, that through sports, we are going to come together, and I do believe that the rest of the world will have an effect on China, already having an effect on China. There's been stuff going on in the Chinese stock market that I think is crazy. I think there's a massive opportunity for wealth expansion and doing things in that aspect. But the destruction that is coming on the fifth night, and we'll see atomic weapons this year. I mean, we will see either...
Used
atomic weapons. We will see them within the next, in 1 year, give it 13 months. Let's say when we're having this conversation, December of 2008 or so, we'll see the use of nuclear weapons by the end of this year.
That's a pretty heavy statement.
But the destruction that we're
now,
going
wait,
to...
Wait, what you said by the end of this year
but
or a year?
1 year. 1 year one from year. Now.
All right.
By the 2008...
From now to 2008.
Through November of 2008. Let's call it December. I said in the next 13 months, we'll see the use of atomic weapons. And the use of atomic weapons will either be, but Syria, Iran, and quite possibly Pakistan, India. Because we're talking about a massive separation and the collapse of an international monetary system here, that this whole thing is going to be one last, the destruction of the fifth night will serve to create the space for the new flowering to blossom for the beginning of the sixth day. The good news is the beginning in 2008 to 2009 is a flowering, which is going to be a renaissance of advanced unifying synthesis. There's going to be a very tense coexistence between East and West, between new spirituality and the remnants of this global materialistic power. In the same aspect, the same cycle that we're starting here was in the last cycle, we saw the fall of the Roman Empire. We saw the start of the Great Depression. We're going to see a major downturn economically in all aspects, not just the United States and capitalist societies, but economies in the entire world. You're seeing the return now, and you've been seeing this over the last couple of years, of the ruling elites, of the blue bloods, all taking back their power. But the total collapse of the international monetary system and the beginning of the end of the quantitative abstractions of values that are mediated by the left brain, which is the left-hand side of the brain controls the right-hand side of the body.
Well, do you see a collapse, though, of the international monetary system or just the United States' financial system?
Worldwide. I'll tell you what's happening. You want to know what's going on economically right now?
Yeah.
Behind the scenes right now, France is broke. France basically about 2 months ago declared bankruptcy to most of the international banks. Germany's quite possibly not far behind. The euro hit... I've been doing some Forex trading, and, you know, we had a really bad day because the euro hit $1.47 and change. That means that with the euro going up, that means that they can't export anything. That means the French and the Germans are just screwed. They can't export anything to anywhere else in the world. That also means that with the U.S. economy tanking and with the U.S. dollar plunging to new lows, that means that you now have BMW moving factories into the United States. You now have Boeing getting contracts. You have Airbuses now being moved into the U.S. because the dollar is so cheap here.
Well, that's a good thing, right?
It is. It is in one aspect because we've kind of become the new Guatemala, if you will.
You mean our workers will become those lower paid workers?
Well, because what's happened because of the dollar, because the dollar is tanking. I'll tell you what's happening in the film business because the Canadian dollar.
And then tell us, why is the dollar tanking?
Because they're printing billions of them with nothing to back them. And they've been doing this ever since March, and they've been doing this. Benjamin, I will throw money out of helicopters, Bernanke. I'm sorry, his name is not Benjamin. His name is Ben Shalom Bernanke. It's just Ben. It's not Benjamin. But we talked about this a year ago. Back in March of 2006, they took the Federal Reserve note off the M3 index, and once they did that, they didn't have to explain to anybody how much currency was actually in circulation. That was the only thing because that index had all kinds of things that went. I mean, wages went against it, prices went against it. People could have sort of an idea as to how much money is in circulation, and they basically just said, we're not going to tell you how much money is in circulation. I did an interview. I had a conversation with the head of the Federal Reserve Bank in San Francisco, and I printed it in my newsletter. And I flat out asked him, and this was about 2 years or so ago, I said, how much money is in circulation? And he said, I don't know, about $650 to $700 billion cash is actually in circulation. And I said, what's the national debt? And he said, well, it's about $8 trillion. And I said, what does the national debt have to be paid in? And he said, well, Federal Reserve notes. It's like, well, how are we supposed to pay the national debt when there's not enough money in the world to actually pay it? And he said, I don't know. And, eloquent answer, I don't know. He said, we're going to go to some kind of credit debit system where they're not even going to bother printing the money anymore. It's going to be photonic. It's all going to be blips of light and photons and all on your credit card, and eventually, which will go to an RFID identifying chip system, which is the
cashless society.
Yeah, of course, a cashless society, because now, and here's the really scary thing. I mean, the next step is there are people talking behind the scenes now that the euro is going crazy, that the central banks now have done the exact same thing to the Europeans that the Federal Reserve did to the United States beginning in 1913. In 1913, here's an interesting conspiracy theory for you, the only people that could have stopped the Warburgs and the Morgans and the bankers, the Rothschilds and these gangs from forming the Federal Reserve were people like the Astors, and they all died on the Titanic. So the minute all the wealthy people die on the Titanic, it then allowed them to set up the central bank and set up the Federal Reserve in 1913.
Now, there's not another conspiracy there.
Oh, there is, but it's, it has to do with them withholding reports and the prize that was given to the captain for making the crossing in record time and sailing right into an ice field. But the Astors died, and that allowed them to all meet at Jekyll Island and form the Federal Reserve and basically get complete control of the money supply. It took them 20 years from 1913 to 1933 to bankrupt the government of the United States. What is happening in Europe is that the European Union and the formation of a central currency there, they are doing exactly the same thing to the Europeans they did to us. They will bankrupt out Europe, and once they bankrupt out Europe and form a depression, if you will, they'll be able to gain complete control of assets, and they'll do everything to the Europeans that they did to the United States between 1933 and 1945. You're just seeing an acceleration of that process now. And with France, and France is done. I mean, you'll see riots in France by the end of this year. By January, February, you'll see riots in Paris. You'll see riots all over because their entire social structure is going to completely collapse. The country's bankrupt. They can't export anything. Germany's the same way. And
why allow this to happen?
Because it allows them to get control of assets in the United States. They're talking about maybe just letting the dollar collapse. And if the dollar collapses in the United States, then that means if the U.S. dollar is worth the same as the Canadian loon and tune, and if it then becomes worth the same as the peso in Mexico, they're already minting the Amero out of Denver,
which means that
they then replace the currency. And over and over and over again, I've been saying that the currency for North America, for the NAU, the North American Union, again, something I've been talking about since the Vajra Chronicles of 1994, that the NAU will be the United States, Mexico, and Canada. And they introduced the Amero, and the Ameros are silver, and they'll all be backed by silver. And you just saw silver hit my other benchmark, which was $15. I talked about it before. Yep. I started recommending silver on the program back when it was $3. Then I said it was going to go to 9 by Christmas of 2005. Then I said it was going to go to 13, and it went to 13. Now it's up to 15.33. Silver's going to hit $30 by next year.
Too bad the Hunt brothers.
I'm sorry?
Sustained. Too bad the Hunt brothers couldn't have sustained that. Huh?
Well, you're going to see. You'll see silver at $30, and you will see gold. Here's a major prediction for you kids. But let's talk about a year from now. Let's project out a year. Let's call it spring of 2008. But you'll see gold. And I never thought I would say this because I always figured when gold hits about 800 or 850, it's like the speed of light. The bigger gold gets, the more gold just seems to appear.
Get the number out. How much?
I'm talking $1,200.
Wow. We'll be back.